I do want to thank Steve for thinking about public health as part of the partnership in this summit, but also as one of the leaders in the injury prevention world around traffic safety. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you for inviting CDC. And I guess I want to know from the audience, how many of you are traffic engineers? Can you raise your hand? Traffic engineers, okay. How about transportation planners? Okay, a few more. How about public health? Oh, dear. Just one.
First responders.
Well, I have good news for you today. Because all of you in this room today at this summit are in public health. Because the work that you do every day prevents deaths and reduces injuries. And that's what we do in public health. So welcome to public health. My name is David Sleet. I am the Associate Director for Science in the Division of Unintentional Injury at CDC. I just stepped down. I'll be a consultant for CDC starting today. But I wanted you to know Holly Billy, who's in our office, is seconded to us from the Indian Health Service. For the past 20 years, we've had a secondee come to us on their FTE from the IHS to work specifically on American Indian problem. And Ann Dillinger is our branch chief for the transportation safety team. So why CDC? You know us as the disease detectives. We do groundbreaking work on infectious and communicable diseases like Ebola and more recently Zika. But you can look at traffic injuries the same way you would look at an infectious disease as an epidemic. And indeed, the former Transportation Secretary Norm Mineta called traffic injuries an epidemic on wheels. At the end of 1999, beginning of the new century, CDC declared the 10 most important public health achievements of the century. And these are those: vaccinations, workplace safety, control of infection, heart disease and stroke prevention, healthier foods, healthy mothers, healthy babies, family planning, fluoride in drinking water, and tobacco hazard awareness. The one that we convinced CDC to add is motor vehicle safety. And you can see why. These are rates of vehicle miles traveled from 1925 on, going way up. You would expect from that you would also see traffic deaths equivalently going up because of exposure. But in fact, the traffic death rates went down. And the reason for that is the work that you do and the work that we do in highway safety. This is our classic 10 leading causes of death chart. Blue is unintentional injury, green is suicide, and red is homicide. These are the age groups. So you can see across the top, unintentional injuries are the leading cause of death, age 1 to 44. And everything from 5 to 44 is traffic related. So we have a huge problem today, and this chart won't look any different next year. And it's this intersection between public health and transportation that we're all interested in. If you talk about silos, you can think of transport silos, roads, vehicles, licensing, enforcement, mobility, safety, and industry and economy. Those are the things the transport sector are interested in. For public health, we do population health, illness and injury care, health care, prevention, EMS services, and rehabilitation. So I think the intersection that joins us together, really, is road safety, because both transport and public health are interested in increasing road safety. Our public health role in traffic injury prevention is clear. We want to save lives and reduce injuries. And we do that by using epidemiology, monitoring road deaths and injuries, similar to the FAR system at NHTSA. We use our own public health service data. Through education and training to inform health and transport agencies about what we've learned. Prevention, identifying and implementing the best practices to reduce traffic injuries, and acute care to improve EMS and trauma care. And we use this, what we call the public health approach to traffic injury prevention. It's really no different than using the same approach to control infectious disease or communicable disease. And it starts with the problem and works towards a solution. And the first step is to define the problem. And we use data to do that. We use surveillance systems to do that. And if you remember the old adage, in God we trust, all others need data. The second step is to identify the risk factors and the protective factors, developing and testing interventions to address and lower those risks, and finally, to assure dissemination and widespread adoption. So, defining the problem. Here is the epidemiology of the rural problem. 19% of the population live in rural areas, but they represent 30% of the miles driven, and they represent 55% of the crash deaths. Death rates in rural areas are 2.5 times higher than in urban areas. 40% of them are in rollover crashes. EMS response times are 50% slower. 16% of the deaths in rural areas occur at intersections, compared with 31% in urban areas, probably because those crashes in rural areas are running off the road. And finally, safety belt use in the front seat occupants are 83% in rural, 86% in urban. Here again, similar to Mike's slide, the rural at the top, these are deaths per 100 million vehicle miles traveled by year, 1977 on. And for each year, urban is lower than rural. The second step, identifying risk and protective factors. Here are the classic ones that we think about when we want to reduce traffic injuries. Drunk driving, not using motorcycle helmets, not using seat belts, not using child restraint devices or using them improperly, and excessive speed. And I'll add one more that's not on this chart. It's probably of relevance to the rural community, which is fatigue. To illustrate that, here's a graph of percentage of crashes due to fatigue as a function of number of hours driving. So this is after 8-hour break. After 8 hours, you can see how it goes up as you continue to drive without a break. So fatigue is an important risk factor, I believe, particularly in rural areas, where there are long distance between cities and there's lots of commercial traffic. A third step is to develop and test interventions. These are the classic interventions we know work. Increasing seatbelt use, reducing alcohol-impaired driving, reducing vehicle speed, improving pedestrian environments, wearing bicycle and motorcycle helmets, improving licensing, increasing enforcement, and building safer roads. These are some of the findings that we at CDC have come up with. We learned that 0.08 BAC levels can save 400 to 600 lives a year, which was the main impetus behind President Clinton signing the legislation. Motorcyclists have the highest death rate per vehicle mile traveled. If you wear a bike helmet, you can reduce your head injury by 85%. Even though there's 123 million episodes of drunk driving each year, we only arrest about 1.4 million. A third of adult pedestrians who are killed have alcohol on board. And driver education actually increases fatalities. Why is that? Because if you license drivers at an earlier age, they get on the road faster. The younger they're on the road, the higher their risk. It's not education itself, but it's that education qualifies them for a license earlier. For rural prevention strategies, rumble strips decrease off-road crashes by 40%. Roundabouts may actually reduce injury crashes by 75%. We know alcohol checkpoints reduce fatalities by 9 to 20%. Ignition interlocks for alcohol reduce rearrests by 40%. Primary seatbelt use laws work, 8% reduction. Motorcycle helmets can cut fatalities 40%, injuries 70%. Child safety seat laws reduce fatalities by 35% if they're used correctly. And graduated driver licensing, 35% fatal reduction. Let me show you an example of graduated driver licensing policy. This is just one piece of graduated driver licensing, which is the number of passengers you have aboard. So here's a driver age 16 to 17 with zero passengers and the risk. Now the same driver with one passenger, with two passengers, with three passengers. Same driver with two more years of experience on the road, 18 to 19-year-old, one passenger, two passengers, three passengers, four. Now let's look at people our age. One passenger, two, three, four. So thank you if you're over age 30 driving with me. You can probably help me avoid a crash. And a fourth step is dissemination of this evidence and widespread adoption. So we did a series of systematic reviews for something called the Community Guide for Preventive Services. We focused on these three areas, alcohol, seatbelts, and child restraints. And we found evidence, good evidence, for all three. Now our goal was to try to spread the word to the most vulnerable populations. And when we had a look at it, the American Indian and Alaskan Natives were among the highest vulnerable populations. Here's motor vehicle traffic for AIAN populations, with traffic being 30% of all age deaths. Second is poisoning. Here's the AIAN at the top. These are rates by race compared to all of the other races below them by year. Every year they're higher. Here's a map similar to Mike's. The darker the color, the higher the rate. These are American Indian, Alaskan Native populations per 100,000. So what you see here are primarily the rural populations. In Wyoming had the highest, 72, a rate of 72 per 100,000. That's three times the rate of other ethnic groups in that state, followed by South Dakota, also three times the rate. Montana, two times the rate in their state. North Dakota, similar. Arizona, 45. And New Mexico, 38. The average for the states for all other ethnic groups is about 20. And through this system that we have at CDC called Whiskers, you can actually produce maps for your state, for the US, or even for your county. So here's the county of Wyoming, showing that this county in Wyoming is among the highest for American Indian, Alaskan Native traffic deaths. So you can play with this on your own computer and produce your own statistics. And so we developed a tribal motor vehicle injury prevention grant program. We funded four tribes around the country for 3 years to take the results that we found from our community guide systematic review and apply it to the reservation. So we did alcohol-impaired driving, child safety seats, and seatbelt programs in those four tribes. Later, we collaborated with FHWA, Indian Health Service, and BIA to fund 8 more tribes, collected results, and framed some lessons learned. And you can find most of this material on our website at CDC. We also partnered with FHWA in a program that they have that you can see there's a booklet outside about, which is the Tribal Safety Circuit Rider Program, to provide technical assistance to tribes. And we also produce a motor vehicle toolkit for American Indian and Alaskan Natives with fact sheets, posters, and videos. And as well, a tribal best practices guideline, which sort of summarized our 8 years of experience with tribes in rural areas in terms of reducing traffic injuries. So these are just some of the activities that we're engaged in at CDC to help tackle the rural injury prevention problem, particularly on the highways. So you can count on public health. We'll be there to help you in your rural road safety efforts by improving and expanding surveillance, uncovering new and emerging transportation injuries, conducting and supporting translational research so you can actually use the evidence that we collect, developing and testing new interventions. They might be around distracted driving, evaluating your existing programs, balancing safety with the ability to be able to drive as you age, and finally, in strengthening partnerships, because I think what we're all interested in, as Mike mentioned, is getting towards zero deaths. Thank you very much.